Hey friend, welcome to the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Emily Cleghorn. This podcast is for mamas navigating childhood trauma while also walking through mamahood. I'm so excited that you've decided to take some time out of your day to join me and tune in. I hope you find this podcast uplifting and empowering. Let's get to it.
Hello, hello, my friends, and welcome to this episode of the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. I am so excited that you have taken some time out of your day to tune in and listen to this conversation. Today, we are joined by Erica Hoke. She is a fertility coach and the author of the Infertility Success series of books. Welcome, Erica.
Hi, Emily. Thank you so much for having me on today.
It's a pleasure to have you. So let's dive right in and have you share a bit of your story and what brought you to being a fertility coach.
Well, we'll have to go right into the deep end. So basically at 35, I knew that I was going to probably have some problems conceiving. I had about seven different diagnoses that would even singly kind of have prevented me from getting pregnant. I had uterine fibroids. I had stage four endometriosis. I had ovarian cysts. I had PCOS. I had a lot of things. And so it wasn't any surprise that this was going to be a challenge for me. But what I counted on was being able to do IVF. That was my backup plan, right? I think IVF is everybody's plan B. And when I found out that I also had diminished ovarian reserve, also known as DOR, that is when my world kind of came crashing down. So basically they couldn't do an egg retrieval. So therefore I couldn't do IVF, and there goes my plan B out the window. So it was really devastating news to get, because I really wanted to be a mom. I really expected that that would work out for me, that, you know, my husband and I would be able to go that route and work through the issues that I was having medically that way. And when that was taken away from me, it was, it was very traumatic, and I had to work through those feelings. But in the end, I said to myself, okay, I'm going to find out what affects infertility or fertility, and then I'm going to do everything that is in my control and in my power to make those changes, to make myself as healthy as I can, and address the issues behind all these symptoms that I was having, right? All the endometriosis, all the fibroids and things like that. And so I set about doing that, and it took about 18 months for us to conceive our oldest son. And then around 27 months later, I delivered twin boys. I'm the mom of four boys, spoiler alert here. And then 7 years after the doctors told me that I had less than a 1% chance of getting pregnant, I delivered my last son at 43. So, there were, of course, a lot of steps in between there, a lot of changes in between there, but that's kind of what led me to wanting to be a fertility coach, because I know that there's a woman listening right now, or the sister of a woman listening right now, who thinks just because a doctor told them that they can't get pregnant, that or that the doctors can't help them, that they feel like they can't get pregnant. And then they just go home and they resign themselves to that prognosis or diagnosis. And it's not true. There's a lot that's in your control. And it's what I focus on with my clients to help them get to a place of overall health, with pregnancy being the outcome.
That is amazing. And I just want to share, interject a little bit of my story. So I also struggled with infertility, and my infertility was triggered by my stress response, the trauma that I experienced as a child, and my stress response being stuck in the sympathetic state prevented mm-hmm. my body from producing the right hormones at the right time. It was stuck with cortisol, right? And when cortisol is being produced, no other hormones are being produced at the level that they need to be. So
yeah, that's absolutely correct. We could do a whole episode just on that. Like we could stop there and just tear that apart. But yeah, people, it's one of the things that I teach my clients. And one of the things that we talk about, not only in the infertility success book, but the postpartum mm-hmm. edition of that, is that trauma has to be addressed. People dismiss it as, and like I said, we're like diving right into it, right? Because it's so integral. You have to address not only your past trauma, which I also had, we share, you know, some of that. But you have to address the trauma of infertility itself. And let me just say, if you're listening mm-hmm. and you don't mm-hmm. recognize that infertility is trauma, mm-hmm. it is. We really have to start saying that more. Mm-hmm. People dismiss the impact that those monthly losses have. And when I say monthly mm-hmm. losses, every time when you're trying to get pregnant, when you're being intentional mm-hmm. about getting pregnant, and that's not happening for you, every cycle is a loss for you. So imagine, mm-hmm. you know, experiencing the death of grieving on a monthly basis. It's mm-hmm. devastating. And then you have, hopefully you can't hear my dog going crazy in the background. And then you have, you know, the actual traumas too mm-hmm. of miscarriages of mm-hmm. Babies, you know, that don't make it and things like that. So you have to, you definitely have to address those things along the way and be proactive in that. And, you know, I could mm-hmm. talk about how that carries over into motherhood too. Like, I think that we're going to get there, but yeah.
So you're right. We totally could come back and do a whole episode on the trauma of infertility. And if you are listening right now and you would like to hear that episode, let me know, send me some sort of a DM or message, and Erica and I will definitely record that for you. Today, though, we are talking about infertility success, the postpartum mess.
Yes.
So,
Yeah. It is a mess. So what happens many, many times is, first of all, infertility is not exclusively a type A personality event, but mm-mm. a lot of times a significant portion of women who go through infertility are type A personalities. So you go through months and sometimes years of infertility treatments. You have the stress of the money component. You have had miscarriages perhaps in the past or not, but you're afraid that you're going to have a miscarriage. So let's just walk that, what that looks like out. You get pregnant. Mm-hmm. You've had losses. So the entire pregnancy, you're terrified that you're going mm-hmm. to lose the baby. Mm-hmm. Many, many women think that they will die during childbirth, or that their child will die, their infant will die in childbirth. And then you get this baby home, right? And you're so overjoyed. But let's be real, like motherhood is hard. Motherhood mm-hmm. after infertility is exceptionally hard. And one of the things that makes it so hard is that people think that baby, that the success of the infertility is somehow a magic wand that erases all the pain of the process, the trauma, mm-hmm. the all of it, right? And mm-hmm. we know that that's not true. Babies cannot do that. They're not a magic wand. Mm-hmm. They're needy little creatures, right? Who take every single ounce of your being to make it through newborn and infancy. So you can see, just mm-hmm. by walking that out, of how you come home from the hospital as someone who has gone through infertility with this newborn, and you can't complain that the baby's not sleeping, and you can't complain that you're, you know, exhausted, or that you maybe don't feel bonded to this baby because you have been separating yourself, right, from the possibility of losing this child. So you haven't allowed yourself to experience the joy and the hope of being pregnant and bringing the baby home. You know, that's too much sometimes for people to wrap their minds around. And so you really have a perfect storm in early motherhood, especially of postpartum anxiety, postpartum depression, and things like that. So I have something on the tip of my tongue, and I'm just trying to think of what I'm trying to say here. But I think that it is a mindset issue as well that carries over, right? So when you're going through infertility, you feel broken, you feel wrong, you feel defective, you feel incapable. And I see women then go through the birth process and they carry that into the birthing process, and they have birth trauma, right? And then they carry that into motherhood and they feel incapable and they feel broken and they feel wrong. And all of the things that I mentioned before, the not sleeping, the whatever, as an infertility person, you feel very separated from your peer group, right? You can't identify with people that just get easily, you know, pregnant easily. You can't identify with women, you know, your own age that don't go through that. Now, as a mom, here we are again, we're separated from our peer group. People don't understand why you're just not overjoyed at every, you know, every diaper change, right? So it's really problematic. And so the book is really about telling these women's stories. They're all different perspectives. We have moms of multiples, more than my twins. We have someone that had triplets and then 9 months later had a singleton. We have people just telling their stories of what that looked like and how they could not and did not recognize how much help they really needed in the postpartum phase because of not dealing with the trauma along the way. That was a lot. Sorry. I'll take a breath.
Yeah, it is a lot. So for a trauma survivor, so you've got childhood trauma or whatever in your rearview mirror, you've dealt with infertility trauma, and then you're in the mix of postpartum. And in our society, North American society, there is very little support in postpartum. So if you are someone who is not super close to your family and they're not super supportive of your life, of
the family you're creating, and
then you're left to raise this child and navigate postpartum villageless. And and it's so important to have a village, not just to help you raise your child, but to help you heal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, the whole thing about, I know that we're talking about, you know, how the trauma, like what women were told, right? What women have been told in their trauma. And so it is that, that lack of empowerment. You know, they've been told that their body is incapable, that they are broken. You know, a lot of times, the infertility success comes at the, comes through medical intervention. And so they feel very disconnected from their body. The trauma also causes that disconnect, right? So the breastfeeding also, like if they want to breastfeed, that feels very, can feel very traumatic to women that have a trauma history. And so there's a lot of points of pain points in that mm-hmm. process that just cause it to be really, really hard. And you're right. It's so isolating as a new mom. Postpartum expectations in North America are ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. They are. So what was your biggest takeaway from creating and publishing Infertility Success Postpartum Mess?
The biggest takeaway from that project is that is the unrealistic expectations, right? You mm-hmm. have to be real with yourself about what it is that you really want. There's a lot of pressure to meet other people's expectations, especially if you, if it's a firstborn and you've gone through an infertility struggle and your family does know about it or what have you, you know, there's just a lot of unrealistic expectations. And I think that women, especially with their newborn, I don't know if like your first newborn, I don't know if you'd agree or not, but you know, there's a big expectation to meet other people's mm-hmm. standards, right? To make mm-hmm. other people happy. And meanwhile, the woman, and again, I think that this is a North American thing, the woman is trying to heal and she's trying to recover. And all anybody wants to do is hold the baby, right? So we mm-hmm. have to be stronger than that. We have to say, have good, healthy boundaries, mm-hmm. And set our own internal expectations and not be, you know, bullied. I don't know if that's too strong of a word, but pushed into meeting somebody else's standards. We have to put ourselves first, which is from trauma survivor standpoint is really hard, right? But this is part of the healing process. So I would say that every woman in the book just needed more help, but she needed to stand up for herself and she needed to set her own standard of expectations for postpartum.
Yeah. Learning how to set boundaries and reclaiming your voice are huge components in healing from trauma, mm-hmm. period. Yep. Especially in postpartum.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they talk about, childbirth educators talk about if people could actually see the wound of a woman's body, which is the healing uterus, right? Like if you could walk around with your uterus on the outside of your body where the placenta was attached, and it's like a wound this big that you're healing, then maybe they would pay attention. But, you know, it's just, birth is a beautiful and natural thing. And there's a healing component to it, even if mm-hmm. things go perfectly, which that's a whole separate conversation. But we know that from statistics, often it does not. And there's a whole birth trauma associated with that too. But at the very least, say you have the most ideal situation, you still have healing to do. And in our culture, we do not honor that at all.
No. So what are some tips, maybe three tips that a listener could take with them throughout their day today after they have finished listening to this episode and they are navigating that postpartum mess that we're talking about? What can they do? What are three things that they can do to help themselves right now?
Yeah, I think that the first thing is if you're postpartum and you're struggling is to be honest with your partner about that. You know, as women, I see a lot of us just trying to bootstrap our way through mm-hmm. That period of life. And we're not honest with how deep our emotions are going, you know? So if you're in a committed relationship, your first go-to person should be your partner, right? Mm-hmm. And then you guys can decide together what that looks like, whether you need medical, seeking medical attention for the postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety. I tell people with multiples all the time, but this could apply to singletons too. You know, I don't care what you have to sell. You know, if you have to sell your second car, if you have to sell something, to get the postpartum help you need to get somebody in there in your space to help you, you should do it for yourself. You deserve to have the help. If you don't have that external support from family, from your biological family, find a way, call a church. If you're not part of an organization, like, do something to help yourself. Even though it seems extreme, like I tell people, you know, very straightforwardly, even if it means refinancing your house, you know, so that you have the money to get help, like with twins or multiples for the first year, you know, it's pretty unrealistic. I had a 2-year-old and 2 newborns. So they were 27 months apart, you know, and very little help. And it was, you know, my husband was great. He helped with the babies, but he had a full-time job, right? And I wish that I had asked for more help during that. So I would say, whatever it takes, be relentless in your pursuit of help. Allow people to help you, because that's the other thing too, right? We don't want anybody to scrub our toilet. We don't want anybody to, like fold a load of laundry or do dishes or, you know, whatever. And it's, you know, we have to get out of our own way in that way. Right? You need sleep. You need someone to nourish you and take care of you while you're taking care of the baby. And like, let's be very clear. We don't have visitors over to see the baby, right? We have helpers. So, you know, if people say, oh, I'd like to come see you and the baby, you know, you can just rephrase that. Well, I'm not having any visitors, but if you'd like to come help.
Yeah.
You know, I have these things great. That I really need your help with.
That's great. I wish I would have thought of that 5 years ago.
Yeah, no kidding, right? So, we're not coming to like coo over the baby and hold the baby. I need to hold my baby, you know. But
I love that. I love that. Yeah, I'm not having visitors, but if you want to come help me, you're welcome.
Yeah. Yes. I have a list, and make a list. So like, just hand people, this is what I need done today. You know, I need dinner taken out of the freezer and put in the crock pot, or I need the dishwasher unloaded, or could you just vacuum my rug for me? You know, like while the baby's awake and I'm nursing, you know, could you just do that? It doesn't have to be a lot. Most people are really, if they want to come see you and the baby, they're more than willing to spend a few minutes, you know, putting some elbow grease into your, you know, your house and helping you.
Yeah. Awesome. Where can people find Infertility Success Postpartum Mess if they would like to get a copy? Available.
Yes, thank you for asking. It's available through my website, which is just my first and last name. So it's Erica with a C, and then it's Hoke, H-O-K-E, like hope, but with a K. On my website, it's available, and then amazon.com, it's available. And,
awesome. So I will include a link to Erica's website and Amazon if you would like to purchase a copy of Infertility Success Postpartum Mess. Thank you so much for joining me today on this episode of the Mamahood After Trauma podcast, Erica. It was a pleasure having you.
It's always great to see you, Emily. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. If you resonated with what you heard, please hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, and share it with a friend who would also benefit, because we rise together. Until next time, Mama, keep shining.